Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we talk about our favorite superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Hey, everyone. I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And if you want to send us emails, you can send them to waitingfordoom@gmail. So emails to gmail.com. We're on Facebook. And we also have a website, which we don't run, but it's run by a mate of ours called Doug, who does a fantastic job on Doom Patrol posts and posts that support our show. And we love his site, and you should go and see it because you will love it too. And it's called mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And all our episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, Comicosity is a fantastic site for comic information and news. And it's pretty different to most of the sites out there in that it has a lot of championing the queer stuff. So there's an article there called Queer Visibility This Week, and it's about the new Snagglepuss comic. So, there's a Snagglepuss comic coming. Do you know about this already, Mike?
Heavens to Murgatroyd, do I ever? Yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's basically recasting Snagglepuss as a gay playwright in the 1950s.
Right.
But this article, it takes that as a launching point and goes through a lot of, the history of, playwrights and gay playwrights and, the private public life differences. So focuses on Tennessee Williams and William Faulkner, Huckleberry Hound is basically like a William Faulkner character in the comic. And, yeah, it's a very interesting article, very educational, and it's basically about – the way that, there was always queer society out there, but it was hidden and, people had to act differently in, in public and, they could be themselves in private. And the nature of it, it's really, it was very underground until like the 70s and the 80s. But, I mean, as we know today, there is still so many issues with the way people are treated for their preferences.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people want society to go backwards, so screw those people.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that was my pick. Check it out. It's written by Matt Centauri. But, yeah, lots of food for thought. Yummy, yummy.
Excellent.
I hope I don't make that stick. I'm going to have to do it all the time.
Anyway, how's the rest of your week been?
Oh, I saw the sequel that everyone's talking about. The controversial sequel. I saw Daddy's Home 2.
Oh, right. I thought you were going to say Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Ah, no, that's an old film, Mike.
Well, I'm really behind on reading, so, I'm really behind on watching stuff too. So anyway, what did you think of the new sequel?
It was adequate.
Right. Okay.
No, it's weird. My son really liked Daddy's Home, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw the second one, and honestly, I wasn't expecting much, but I think it was better than I expected because it had a lot less of that cringe comedy that the first one had.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, generally it had, you know, anyway. But I was disappointed by the end of the film because it stole an idea that I'd been getting ready to use for something. So screw that.
Right.
Anyway, what about yourself, Mike?
That's unfortunate. I did actually see a sequel.
Oh.
Yeah. Like the new Star Wars film.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You haven't seen that one yet?
Yeah, I saw that too, yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah. What do you think of that one?
I very much enjoyed it.
Excellent.
Excellent. Yeah.
Even
the Harry Potter film in the middle of it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I don't think I was bowled over as much as other people have been, which is fine. You know, not everything's for everyone. But yeah, I caught up with my brother yesterday, and he absolutely hated it.
Wow.
He hated every minute of it. He's probably not going to go see episode 9 because of this. So, yeah. Whereas I'm like, yeah, some bits were great. Other bits didn't quite work for me. So, you know, each to their own. Yeah.
I'll just say it gave me things I wasn't expecting. And I think I enjoyed that because I don't want to go and see a film that I could imagine. I want to go and see a film that someone else has imagined for me. And I did like that it sort of, you know, the first one, Force Awakens really copied New Hope. This one sort of bundled up Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi and copied them both all at once and really laid some groundwork for, you know, a fresh new horizon in the next film that will be fairly hard to predict. And, you know,
yeah.
I like that it sort of said, don't worry about who Snoke is. Don't worry about who Rey's parents are. You know, let's just get on with it. And
yes.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on the rehashed elements. I think the film has it's been all about clearing the slate, letting go, and let's hope episode 9 does actually do that. But I agree with you. It gave us stuff we weren't expecting.
So. Yeah.
And some bits that we didn't really need. So,
yeah, possibly.
Yeah. Anyway, any comics read this week?
I'm going through my Legion of Superheroes. Basically, I have this is the 5-year later Legion, which, what is it? Is probably volume 3 of the Legion of Superheroes. And I'm basically trying to read all the hard copies I have.
Right.
Before I get, so I've got up to issue 27, and then after that I have all the digital copies. So I'm about to go on holidays, and I really don't want to take any hard copies with me, so I'm trying to get through them.
Right.
So I can just take the iPad instead of a pile of comics.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I'm enjoying
good luck with that.
Thank you. I'm enjoying the Legion of Superheroes. What else have I been reading? I've been reading a bit of Kingsman sequel. You know the Kingsman?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the Secret Service is I've been reading a sequel to that. And I think it's written by Andy Diggle, and it's quite fun. It's quite fun.
Cool.
It sort of captures disrespectful tone of the first film quite well.
Right.
And the first series, you know.
Okay.
He's a super spy, but he also goes home to, you know, complete bogan family
life.
Yeah. Not the British use the word bogan, but we know what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, look, they'll be racing the Wikipedia the minute they hear this. So,
yeah. What about yourself?
Unfortunately, no. My comic reading pile remains untouched. It has been incredibly busy at my work of late. For those who don't know, I work for the state government. We recently had our election, and it took them, I think, almost 2 weeks to announce the winner, and since then there's been a mad dash to get the cabinet resorted and, you know, figure out which minister's going to do which portfolio, and it's the busiest December I've had ever, I think.
Yay.
It's normally a quieter time of year, but no, No, it's not.
It's but not. You're about to have a break, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, this is my last working week of the year. And I am hoping to attack the pile over my break.
Well, just do what you want, Mike. Don't just read things because you have to. Read it because you want to.
No, well, they wouldn't be in the pile if I didn't want to read them. So, but the fact that some of the titles were coming out, you know, twice a month means I'm really behind on a lot of things.
So, right, I hear you.
Yeah. I think I saw Detective Comics was coming out with 970 soon, and I think I've got 950 something. Who knows?
Whoa.
I'm way behind. Way, way, way behind.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Gonna get caught up in the summertime if I don't melt from the heat. Because it's getting warm already.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, speaking of good stuff, how about we go and have a look at what's going down on Durrington Way?
Sure. So, fairly quiet on Durrington Way at the moment. There's a few people are putting out their best of the year lists, and Doom Patrol's on a few of those, which is always nice to see.
Excellent.
Yeah, Nick is basically probably tweeting about Mr. Miracle is more than Doom Patrol these days, so he's spitting out the covers for that, mm-hmm. and they all look fantastic. There's an amazing one this week with the female Furies from Apocalypse.
Yes, that looks great.
Doesn't it look fantastic?
The crazy eyes on the one at the front of the group. Oh,
Mad Harriet. Yeah,
that's her.
Yeah. So yeah, it's got Stomper, it's got Lashina, it's got Mad Harriet, and it's got the other one. I can't remember the name.
Let's call her Debbie.
Debbie, the old lady who kills you.
Yeah, that sounds like Debbie.
Oh, Debbie. Yeah. So looking good. So and Gerard, very quiet, probably very busy. I mean, we got the new DC solicits this week and not a single sign of the Doom Patrol. Though I will tell you this. Do you want to save some money, Mike? Do you like saving money?
Oh, yeah, when and where I can, sure.
Well, this week I noticed that the Milk Wars trade is available for pre-order at Book Depository.
Ooh.
So you could get that bad boy for $23 right now.
Nice.
And then you wouldn't have to worry about it, and probably in about a year's time it'll ship. That's a good little discount. And those of you who don't know, I mean, I'm talking mostly people in Australia. If you go with Book Depository, when they first list things, they're really cheap. And then after about a month, the price goes way up. And then when they about to ship, the price goes down again. So,
right.
So the most expensive time to buy a book is when it's like 3 months away.
Okay.
But the cheapest time is when it's like 9 months away or 1 week away. So.
Interesting game they play.
You work out what's right for you, but I'm going to order Milk Wars trade as soon as I get some money.
Right. Sounds like a plan. Cool.
Going to walk the streets later.
Yep, that big busy metropolis that you live in.
Yeah.
Lots of business there, I'm sure.
Is that a siren or a ticking, I hear?
It's the ticking. It's not the police. Even though you're sitting in the house of a policeman right now, so I don't know whether you should have said that.
And I don't have to put on the red light.
Ah, nice work, Roxanne. And shout out to Rifty. Anyway, yes, let's continue on. That is the Doom Clock we can hear, so let's get to it. So, looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out a mere 4 weeks ago, issue 9 of volume 6, which we covered in episode 112, and it gave us the return of Mr. Nobody and his all-new, all-different Brotherhood of Nada. Plus, it gave us the introduction of the Disappointment and some hints as to his nefarious plans for retconning reality, which has to be part of Milk Wars. It just has to be, the way it's leading up to it. If it's something different, if it gives us what we're not expecting, well, anyway, sorry. We stopped talking about Star Wars. I know, I'm moving on. Issue 10 is at this stage, unless Paul corrects me in the next second, scheduled for release on January 24th, 2018.
I have had no news to dispute that fact.
Excellent. So it's still five weeks
away. At this stage.
At this stage, yes. Well, let's stick with that. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for a mere 75 cents American on December 22nd of 1987, with a cover date of April of 1988, was issue 7 of Doom Patrol Volume 2. The creative team of Paul Kupperberg, Eric Larson, Gary Martin, Johnny Workman Jr., and Juliana Ferreter gave us a story titled The Kid's Night Out, in which Lodestone, Karma, and everyone's favorite Hot Hands, they all head out to a nightclub, only to end up encountering the explosive assassin Shrapnel. Remember that one, Paul?
I love that one. Yeah, fun one.
Lots of good fun. Yeah.
Shrapnel.
Yeah, and I remember Ange really liked that panel where Lodestone comes down the stairs in her rather tight dress.
I think he tweeted it this week.
Again. Oh, really? Yeah. No wonder it's in my memory. But get this, we covered that issue all the way back in episode 33.
Wow.
Which was, I think we covered, that may have been like 2015. I can't remember. I should have checked that out. But anyway, go and listen to episode 33 if you want more details on that specific issue. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Sawate. My name is Stella, and I am the host of Backroll to Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast. Backroll to Oracle is a podcast dedicated to Barbara Gordon, the first woman to hold the mantle of Backroll for an extended period of time, roughly 1967 to 1988. The goal of Backroll to Oracle is to examine the character's history from her first appearance as Backroll and continuing through her tenure as Oracle. Each episode looks at a vintage issue of Detective Comics or Batman, as well as other books like Justice League and Freedom Fighters, and modern issues of Batgirl and Birds of Prey. I also keep track of news involving Batgirl and other members of the Bat family, and I have a revolving series of segments like Babs in the Tube, which highlights appearances of Babs in TV and film, Shipper Spotlight, which looks at a variety of comic and pop culture couples, gives their history, and determines whether they are hot or not, Reading with Stella, which could be described as an audio drama, or just me reading a book that relates to Babs or doesn't, and of course, the mainstay literature recommendation. I have been blessed to interview writers Scott Beatty and Chuck Dixon on their Batgirl Year One work, Brian Q. Miller on his Batgirl run, Dwayne Swierczynski and Christy Marks on their separate Birds of Prey work, and the creators and actors of the Batgirl Spoiled, the web series. I hope to interview more creators and actors in the future. My goal, most importantly, is to make a fun, entertaining, and thoughtful show that people enjoy and from which they learn. Find the show online at thebatmanuniverse.net and iTunes, and follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Batgirl to Oracle. Thank you, and fly on, Babs lovers.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, where we take an in-depth look at a couple of Doom Patrol issues. And this episode, it's a bit of a milestone. It's not only the final episode for the year, but it's also the finale of Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Issues 86 and 87, the big wrap-up of Rachel Pollack's run and the entire volume. And it's interesting to note that we started covering this volume, Paul, back in episode 26.
What?
From July of 2015. So,
wow.
It's taken us a while to get here, but it's been, you know, we've done various other runs in between issues of this. So,
I guess you're talking volume two, which is Kupperberg, then Morrison, then Pollock.
Yeah. A whole 87 issues. So,
wow.
But yeah, it's been over 2 years since we started looking at this specific run. It's like, wow.
Wow.
Anyway, Paul, kick us off with issue 86, please.
Okie dokie. Issue 86 is a DC comic on the Vertigo imprint. It cover dated January 1995.
Ooh.
the modern age. And it actually came out on December 6, 1994, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics. The cover price is $1.95, just under $2. Mm-hmm. That'd be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah. Edited by Lou Stathis, written by Rachel Pollack, art and colour by Ted McKeever, the whole package, and lettered by Johnny Workman Jr. He's back.
Johnny.
And the comic is titled The Cup of Knowing, which is actually Imagine Ari's Friends Part 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as the title for this arc, I don't understand it. Do you?
We'll discuss it later.
Okay.
It kind of ties into the finale. So we'll get there.
And I won't cover the cover because it's got a spoiler.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And I don't mean the back of a hotted up car. Anyway.
Or the Batman ally.
Or the Batman ally. So our story opens. It's Niles Calder, and he's in his room as a child, and his mother berates him for his interest in insects and threatens to destroy his basic terrarium or force feed him the bugs inside. Classy, Mum. Seeking refuge from her relentless criticism, he runs out of the house to a river's edge where he finds a mysterious purple bejeweled cup partly buried in the mud. And taking it home, it pervades his sleep with cobwebs festooning his room. Woken abruptly by his mother the next morning, she sees the cup on his chest of drawers and asks if it's a present for her. So it draws her to it. As she picks it up, it emits a glow and it burns her hands, and she demands that he gets rid of it right away. Returning to the river, young Niles bemoans how unfair it is that he doesn't get to study it, and he smears mud all over it and decides to hide it in his room. Again, the webs spread out across his room as he sleeps, and he awakes in the morning to see a blue globe of the earth on the floor. Or maybe it's an egg, I can't really tell. And it cracks open to reveal a rough clay mask. He's interrupted by Robot Man, Cliff Steele, calling to him. And as his face ages to that of the present-day bearded Niles, he tells the approaching Cliff of his belief in the changing power of catastrophe, then tells Cliff to stay away and pulls a revolver on him. And he shoots the top of Cliff's head off. And Cliff's head spouts verses of scripture as it lies on the floor. And Niles awakens again in the real world because he has no body now. He's just a head on a table. Mm-hmm. And calls for his companion and transport, Alice White Fasound, the sexually remanded spirit woman who straps him to her chest or belly.
Yeah. Just a side note before you continue on. There's a branch at my work whose acronym is SRS. Every time I see that, I start giggling.
I get you.
Anyway, sorry, continue.
Sexually remanded spirits. Anyway, in Brooklyn, the zombie-like Joseph Della Reyna ponders the Doom Patrol and their central role in so many world-ending scenarios. You know, the candle maker, the book of the Botsy thingy. Anyway, as Niles is the seventh dreamer, the seventh cup holder, Joseph decides he will build a golem. So he shapes clay to resemble the head of the chief and then kisses the mouth to give it breath and then puts the head on the body of a lump of clay on the ground and prays over it, and the monstrous form rises. In the Doom Patrol headquarters again, the other rabbi, Rabbi Haim, is unable to see the future as he scries with an always reliable divination method. With Niles locked in his lab, he decides to ask Charlie for assistance, but they are interrupted by a message from the bandage people, other sexually remanded spirits, in the monitor room where they see on a monitor there is a golem attacking people in a temple in Brooklyn. Cliff, Dorothy, Kate, George, Marion, and the rabbi all teleport there immediately and face the golem and the glowing frame, or sephirah, as we're calling them. And the sephirah starts burning George and Marion's outstretched bandages, and Kate tries desperately to coagulate them before their bodies are engulfed with fire. And Cliff wrestles the golem, but a pointy crown appears on his head and starts stabbing through his head casing into his brain. Nasty. Rabbi Haim coaches Dorothy in creating a new imaginary friend to assist, literally helping hands, and helping hands appears and starts pulling the crown off Cliff and starts saving George and Marion from the flames. But the sephirah is now mesmerizing George and Marion, and the golem is spewing gunk onto Cliff, and Rabbi Haim and Dorothy create a new imaginary friend called Dragon Waves to douse the sephirah as Cliff decapitates the Niles golem finally. And there is still no sign of the man in charge, Rabbi Goldblum, who they saw. And one of his surviving acolytes tells them that the rabbi is exactly where he needs to be. Ooh.
Uh-oh.
That's because he has started physically transporting himself into Niles' lab at the Doom Patrol headquarters. Niles sends Alice away for her own protection just as the rabbi starts to appear. And Niles names him correctly as Joseph, causing him to discard his human face. Then they debate with about science and faith and the way that both lead to creation. And Joseph doesn't like the scientific method. But Joseph grabs Niles' head and holds it up to the fierce light from the Sephirah that has appeared, and it turns what's left of Niles into a bloody mush, leaving Joseph finally clutching the seventh cup. Dang.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start. I think this is a better chapter of this story so far because it really does have the Doom Patrol much more front and center.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think I'd ever thought much about what sort of childhood Niles had had to make him the way he is, but it makes sense that he's would have a rough one. So his mother is really quite horrible to him, calls him a bastard and stuff, you know, has no interest in his scientific curiosity and inquisitive spirit. But really just wants him to be normal like everyone else, and, you know, get outside, do some sport, you know, and not very nice. I do note in the art, though, that she's like she's got this outfit on, but it's coloured exactly the same as her flesh, so half the time she looks naked.
In some of the panel, yes, yes.
And she doesn't look that different to Dorothy, really, with her hairstyle. No. So she does have kind of... aggressive looking lips and glasses.
It's a bit of an odd combo. Yes.
Yeah, but very Ted McKeever figure. Very curvy.
Yes.
Exaggeratedly curvy.
Yes. But yes, it's good to see the patrol actually doing something this time.
Yeah.
Actually getting up and kicking butt against the Niles Golem, which was an interesting choice.
But, and as a foe, the Niles Golem is really quite formidable. It's quite hard for them to stop it. I mean, that the whole concept of the crown that latched onto Cliff and starts bending its points inward onto his brain, good little concept there, Rachel. I like it.
Yeah. And I did actually like how the rabbi and Dorothy were working together to create new imaginary friends. So the helping hands, which came from, you know, the rabbi saying, he's holding out words and he's saying, this is Yod, it means hands. Now, you know, help me make it real. And that's how she creates helping hands. So that was a cool little touch.
Yeah. And a little bit earlier in the comic, I didn't mention it in the synopsis, there is a nice little exchange between Kate and the rabbi where Kate asks the rabbi to hold back a little with Dorothy, okay? She's still a kid. And he says, of course, and would I disturb a child when a beautiful woman breathes on my sleeping heart? She says, forget it, Rabbi. I'm only interested in women. Oh, and robots. Definitely robots.
Damn it. That's the thing. This series is about to wrap up and we never get to see more of Kate and Cliff.
Yeah.
And it was always there, just bubbling away under the surface.
Anyway. I know.
But as you said, the cover is a bit of a spoiler because it turns out that that's Joseph De La Reina holding up the head of Niles in front of the obliterating light of the Sephiroth.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But Niles' head is really, really... you don't want your head to look like that.
No. It's getting smashed pretty good.
Yeah. There's a bit of grey matter and a bit of red matter and a bit of hair and it's all crushed and floppy. Mm. Not good.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, this was a good issue. I didn't. The action definitely picked up. We're seeing, the villain of the piece, you know, standing triumphant on that last page as he's got the final cup that he needs. But also there lurking in the corner is Charlie.
Ah.
So, you know, there's always hope. Always
a bit is of there? Hope. Good. Yeah, well, it's not the last issue, is it? So.
Well, no. Speaking of which, shall I get into it?
Yeah. Yep, go for it, Mike.
Here we go. Issue 87. Imagine Ari's Friends, Part 4, A Cry for the Great Face. The final issue of Volume 2, which opens with Joseph de la Reyna performing a ritual, the seven cups now on display beside him. The ritual will allow him to conjure a dream of Shaddai the Almighty, which is another name of God Almighty. There you go, kids. And so to perform this ritual, Joseph kills two white doves with a copper knife, combining their organs with wine, honey, and frankincense to create small cakes, which are then inscribed with the power of the name. De la Reyna dresses in white robes, then burns the cakes and calls the names of power. Gabriel, strong arm of Shaddai. Raziel, lord of books. Daniel, speaker of dreams. He then lays upon a stone altar, and the cakes continue to burn, and a pair of glowing sephiroth appear in the sky above him and his followers. Meanwhile, our heroes have teleported back to DBHQ, and Kate is intrigued by the unexpected smell of flowers and spices. Rabbi Haim realizes that it must be the violet cup of dreams, and everyone starts looking for Niles and for an explanation. Before long, Marion, the bandage woman, finds a smoking pile of flesh on the floor of a lab. Cliff, sweetie, what's that? Robot Man picks up the fleshy mess and says, oh Jesus, it's him. Not a good point. Just as everyone starts freaking the freak out about this discovery, the sexy ghost Alice Wide for Sound enters the room, with Niles' head still alive and wrapped against her body. Just as everyone starts freaking the freak out about this sudden reappearance, the chief reveals that it was Charlie the Living Doll who saved him, as the doll knew de la Reyna was coming and what they had to do, which was basically create a copy of the chief for Joseph to destroy. Just as Cliff realizes that there's something wrong and different about Niles, Charlie enters the room and confirms that Joseph had discovered that the chief had the violet cup within him, and it was a wellspring of his life, his genius, and his desire. So to save Niles, Charlie used part of his own life force to create the Calder copy, but he couldn't recreate the cup, as de la Reyna would have known it was a fake. As Dorothy becomes more concerned and confused about who or what Charlie actually is, he finally reveals the truth. As we saw in the opening of issue 84, which we covered in episode 113, a few years back, Rabbi Haim resurrected his Ari, his rabbi, or Rebbe, as it's written, and this was a man named Isaac Luria. But Joseph de la Reyna stole the body and took it away to a synagogue. What we didn't see that was Luria's body was hidden in a room which was empty except for one thing, a doll. The Ari transferred, So the Ari transferred part of his light, his tikkun, as it's called, into the doll and sent it out into the world. So there you go. So you might need to go back, reread issue 84, part one of this final arc, but in the very opening we see Haim resurrecting someone called Isaac. And it turns out that it's been Charlie all along. So there you go.
Good trick.
I'll explain more about Isaac later when I get to the end. Anyway, Cliff suddenly draws everyone's attention to the window where they see a glowing sephiroth floating in the sky. It's the tree of Hashem, signaling de la Reyna beginning his attempt to heal the world by shattering it first. Across the country, similar sephiroths appear, all of them suddenly bringing the dead and dying back to full life, only to have them shatter like clay moments later. Charlie tells the team that they need to get to de la Reyna, and he leads them through the sephiroth outside Rainbow Estates, through which they are teleported to the stone altar that Joseph is resting on, as we saw at the start of this issue. However, now his followers are all dead. They've been broken by the light, which at this point in time is growing brighter and brighter, and the points of the sephiroth on its frame are starting to crack. Charlie warns them all that once those vessels shatter, the light will devour everything. And so George and Marion react to this by erecting a wall of bandages to try and contain the frame. But Charlie reveals that the only way to contain de la Reyna's light is to find a vessel strong enough to hold it all in. But first, they must reclaim the seven cups. So each of them takes a different one, their bodies glowing as the cups accept them. De la Reyna flies awake and roars in fury and denial, but it's too late. He no longer controls the cups, and his body cracks to ashes. However, The light of the Sephiroth grows brighter, and the universe is still under threat of destruction. Charlie has the group place the cups together in a pile and asks Dorothy to imagine them as one single cup. Somehow it works. A single white cup appears and begins drawing in the light and energy from the Sephiroth. As the cup begins to disappear and the lights begin to fade, Niles commands Alice to take them into the light. Cliff yells at him, "What are you doing? Get back here!" But as Niles and Alice vanish, Kate consoles Cliff that, you know, maybe all Niles ever really wanted was a chance to explore. You know, before he got confused with power and destruction. Sadly, Dorothy turns and finds a lifeless Charlie on the ground, and she bursts into tears when Rabbi Haim confirms that Charlie's gone, for Rabbi Isaac has returned to his death, saying, "Just as the cup of Hashem has returned to its hiding, this is what the Ari taught us. All things must obey their proper time." With tears streaming down her face, Dorothy says she's really going to miss Charlie, and Cliff and Kate step up to comfort her. And Cliff says, "Come on, Dorothy, let's figure out a way home."
Wow.
And that's the end of Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol.
Good golly. Wow.
So, yeah, it's...
Well, it's the end of an arc. It does. It's not really... It doesn't feel like the end of a run, does it, at all?
No, it doesn't. No.
Yeah. No. It's like... Morrison was, you know, his run was, he was playing, you know, different symphonies and bits of jazz and funky stuff. And then he brought it all together into one big crescendo, you know, with a little bit of melody at the very end. But it all, you know, tied everything up and came together. And, you know, all the pieces contributed to a very satisfying whole. Whereas this, it feels like a, you know, a bunch of arcs. This is probably the, you know, the most climactic of them all, but it's not a climax for a series as such. It's just a story that ends and the Doom Patrol are triumphant. But
I know that Rachel had other story arcs planned. I found an interview with her where she had one planned that involved the tarot, and a homeless guy was going to find an ATM card, but when he puts it in a machine, it turns out to be an automatic tarot machine.
Wow.
So each time he, you know, puts a card in, it represents a different card in the tarot. So she had lots of other ideas planned, and again, about things that, you know, were of interest to her personally. So, but you're right, this wraps up the arc. I don't think it's a successful wrap-up to the patrol as a volume, but it sounds like, you know, they were given word that, yeah, we're not going to publish this book anymore, so wrap up your business and move on.
Yeah, so I guess the creators at this point have the choice of, you know, do I try and truncate everything and build, you know, to a finale that I had planned all along, or do I just, you know, wrap the story that I was trying to tell at this time? And yes. I think, you know, I suspect Rachel didn't really have a finale in for the whole patrol, for her whole run.
No.
At this point.
No.
So she just finished the story. So, yeah, but certainly this arc, it finishes stronger than it starts.
Yes.
And I think basically because the Doom Patrol are more central in it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, she's done a lot of work to make us care about these characters, like George and Marion. I'm very affectionate towards those characters. And, you know, Dorothy's been very well explored in this run. You know,
Kate Godwin.
Fantastic character. I don't think she was, you know, in the series as much as I wanted.
No. Now, getting back to the title of this final arc, Imagine Ari's Friends, Rabbi Haim's, you know, rabbi that he resurrected, Isaac Luria, was actually a real person, born in 1534. He was commonly known as Ha'ari, which meant the lion. You know, so that was often shortened to Ari. So I guess Imagine Ari's Friends is about, you know, the people that are around him, in this case, Rabbi Haim, and by extension, the patrol. But yeah, Isaac Luria was apparently he's considered the father of contemporary Kabbalah.
Right.
So Rachel's obviously, you know, decided to put a real world character in her outgoing story. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly. I mean, this run is certainly educational. There's lots of stuff in it that I didn't know about.
That's the thing. If I had more time, I wish I could have researched more into the Kabbalah aspects of this story, because it is really interesting. And I know I did a bit more on it, when we're looking at Joseph de la Reina. Last time we covered Rachel's stuff in episode 113, but I just didn't have the time to do it for this episode. But I do want to go back and sit here with these four issues and go, okay, ah, that means that. Oh, and that was that guy. And, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's really interesting and educational stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me want to wander into a synagogue with these issues and just, you know, see if anyone would want to talk about them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, to be – for a story that's so filled with, Jewish – mysticism and, their religious history, etc. I've never heard anyone talk about it from that perspective.
No.
So, yeah, interesting.
It's as much as we often, well, as much as fans of the Patrol often downplay Pollack's run, I do think this story in particular is one of the really interesting ones she's done. Because it does make you go and think, and it, I know it makes me want to go and read more about the background info. So, whereas with Morrison stuff, I didn't always want to do that, and I don't think I ever did that.
Yeah.
Even though he obviously had other influences there that I know other people have gone and looked up and researched and written about over the years, but yeah.
Yeah. It felt like... what you needed was already there and you didn't have to go looking for more. Mm. Yeah. Whereas this one, it teases you and, says, you're just getting the tip of the iceberg of all this stuff. So, yeah. And I just want to give a shout out for this cover, this finale cover with the Doom Patrol walking off into the sunset, literally.
I remember when I first saw this, I thought it was like an explosion they were walking towards.
Yeah, it could be.
But yours is... nicer.
Yeah.
But yeah, what an interesting ride we've been on.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Rachel stuff and volume 2 overall.
Yeah. Oh dear. I think overall I think it's a brave contribution to the Doom Patrol that she did. I don't know if she started on the right foot as far as just picking up and doing sort of a Morrison cover band for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But certainly I think she found her own voice and, took it in some very interesting ways. So,
yeah. It would be interesting to have seen her do a bit more of it for me personally. I know others would disagree and were probably glad to see it end. But, it always would have been nice, I think.
Yeah.
You're right in that it ends an arc, but it doesn't really end a series.
And no. And I think Rachel's run overall, not every issue is great, but I think there's probably one really good trade if you just did a sort of a best of the run.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly... you've got the issue that introduces Kate with Codpiece, which is a real classic. And,
yep.
Yeah. Some of the Dorothy stuff.
Yeah.
It's not all of the Dorothy stuff because I think it's a bit retready, but But this last arc is one of the strongest. And I wonder what the intention was with Niles disappearing.
Speaking of disappearing, George and Marion. They vanish from the last few pages. I was doing a little bit of research before we recorded, and it listed them as dying in this issue. And I was like, what? I don't remember that. But the last we see of them is when they collect the cups together because, each of the seven cups needs a different person to hold it. And, when Niles and Alice fly off into the light and Cliff is calling out after him, Marion wraps her bandages around him to bring him back, and that's the last we see of them.
Oh, wow.
they just are like completely ignored. So we don't know what actually happened to them. But yeah, it would have been great to learn where Niles went.
Well, when we next see him, he's just brought back by Burn, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess.
Let's, ignore all the previous continuity and just start again.
Yeah.
Do it different, but the same, but not interesting. Anyway.
What was it you call it? The Boring New Adventures?
The Boring Adventures of the Boring Patrol.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of a Green Lantern thing going on with all the cups being different colours, and then they form a white cup.
Yes. Might as
well be a brightest day, a little bit after blackest night. I'm sure that's not intentional.
No.
Especially since Blackest Night and Brightest Day came afterwards.
Long after, I think. So, yeah. But yeah, I'm happy with this final arc. I'm not happy that Volume 2 has ended because it is one of the best volumes. But, you know, what can you do?
It
clearly wasn't getting the sales that DC wanted back in the day. And, they're called to make, I guess. So.
Yeah, but definitely you can see in the letters column that the people who liked this were incredibly passionate about it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it wasn't just, no one was lukewarm on this. You either didn't like it or you thought, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we've vacillated between the two.
Oh, yeah, which I think is fair. As you said, not every issue of the Pollack era was great. But, you know, there were parts of it that were really good.
Yeah. And certainly, Ted McKeever's art, if you like Ted McKeever's art, you have to get these his issues in this run.
Yeah.
Because I must admit,
I've come around more to his art the longer he's on the book, even though there's sometimes it still grates on my eyes. But overall, I'm like, yeah, I can appreciate what he's doing there.
Yeah, well, he's certainly not over glamorizing anyone. I mean, he's does everyone warts and all, and and shows you that every single body shape can be sexy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well,
so, well done, Volume 2, Doomsplain. Yes.
Volume 2, we salute you.
All right, now on with the show. And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom. And this week we are reacting to the answers to the question of the week, which was, who is your favorite character with a walking stick? A stick for walking. And firstly, we heard from a Film and Water podcast who just gave us a picture of Willy Wonka from the start of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the original film that is good, not the remake, which is bad.
Yes, and
so, Ed LaTorre, well done, Rob. Well done, Rob.
Yes, well done, Rob. Ed LaTorre chimed in with that he had made the same choice, that being Willy Wonka. He said, "There's something about Victorian clothing, bright colours, and putting children in danger that just makes such a good character."
It is perfection. Yes. We heard from Dr. Ange, Dr. Ange 70 on the Twitter. He said, in movies, George McCready as Balan Munson in Gilda. I've not had the pleasure myself.
Nor have I. No.
Yes. And then he said, in comics, Mr. E, whose name is Mr. and then the letter E, as in ecstasy, who I've never seen the appeal of. Mystery, I must admit. I've read him in a couple of things.
I know very little about him.
He seemed like
him.
A bastard.
I remember seeing ads for him more than actually reading anything of him.
Yeah, he was a magical character who just seemed very, very downbeat and unhappy. And there's the Books of Magic by Neil Gaiman had all these magical characters coming together to train Harry Potter. Oh, sorry, Tim Hunter. and Mr. E was one of them. It's okay. Right. Books of Magic predates Harry Potter. And Mr. E was one of them, and he actually tries to destroy Tim Hunter at the end of time. Oh. So So that is the characterization of him that's most stuck. And then he got a Vertigo series after that. But he was a pre-existing character that I never saw any of his earlier entry stuff. So.
Okay. Cool. Right. Saul Bishop chimed in with Scrooge McDuck. I like that one.
Oh, yeah. Good choice. Martin Gray said the classic Defenders nemesis, Tapping Tommy, who looks like a tap dancing man.
Yes.
Menacing.
Yes. If I think of the word nemesis, tap dancing dude with a walking stick. Yeah.
Tapping Tommy.
Oh, look, it's Aaron Long at Juice005, and he replied with stick.
Is that a proper answer from Aaron for once?
I think it might actually be, because if I recall correctly, Stick is Daredevil's mentor.
Yeah.
And he had a walking stick because he was blind.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, wow. I think that's a serious answer from Aaron. What a way to see the year out. Gosh.
This reminds me of the joke. What's brown and sticky?
What?
A stick.
Right. I didn't know where you were going to go with that. Anyway.
Then we heard from Ed LaTorre, and he said, I got to say, Willy Wonka, the character represents a certain character type with the Doctor, Scrooge McDuck, and Mary Poppins, who, at one point or another, dress in vaguely Victorian clothing, are quick-witted and whimsical. Very, very nice.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Except Willie's the only one that puts kids in danger.
The Doctor's been known.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Andy Macon at Andy INDK on the Twitters also chimed in with Mr. E. Another vote for Mr. E.
Another two votes for Mr. E. Who'd thunk? Yeah. We heard from Abel Padzilla, who's Winter Warlock Padzilla on Twitter, and he said, I'm kind of partial towards Gandalf. That walking staff is handy against necromancers, giant flaming Balrogs, and hordes of goblins. Very true.
That is true. Mm.
Gandalf does kick all types of ass.
Yes. Tim Price at TimPrice17 said, old Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond. I like that one.
Oh, very clever. Cool. Mm. Moby1 at Shmoby1 said, The Shade. Very good, yes. Excellent. From Starman and from The Flash, the old Barry Allen villain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Carl Bakey at CBakeWare on Twitter said, I'm going to have to say the adorably creepy Igor from Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
With the quote, walk this way.
Oh, dear. Mm. Marty Feldman, fantastic. Yep. Silver and Gold said the Tony Harris Starman with a question mark. I don't recall. Well, that is a staff. I don't think it's a walking stick, but yeah, it's still a good series. It could be used
as a walking stick, though.
It could be. Mm. Or as a crutch, or as, you know, to get your keys out from under something.
Yes. Yes. Multiversatile, as they say. We heard from Abel Padzilla again, and he said, as a second choice, I'd pick Fred Astaire. That walking stick complemented that top hat and tails in a rather smart-looking fashion.
Oh, yep, Fred Astaire. We heard from Ostrakos 1, our mate Kevin, who's mere talk with Vince. And he said, was there anything better than seeing this guy drop his walking stick to take on Dooku and Palpatine in the prequels? I think not. And he put in a picture of Yoda.
Yay.
Yoda. Yeah. I wasn't even thinking about Yoda, and then I watched the film between episodes and went, oh, Yoda has a walking stick.
Yeah. I thought he may have been the entire trigger for this question.
Ah, no.
Okay, there you go. That's stand corrected. Coffin Comics, Clinton Robson at Coffin Comics blog on the Twitters said Donald Blake and Eric Masterson from the Thor comics.
Ah,
yeah. Yes. Old Donald had his walking stick and it became Mjolnir. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it also became that hammer.
Paul.
Sorry. We heard from Jonathan Dye at Changing Shades. He said, Wonka, ever stylish Wonka.
That's three votes for Wonka. Wow. Over on Facebook, we heard from Terry Douglas, who said, couldn't resist, with comic book characters, I'm going to go with Freddie Freeman, a.k.a. Captain Marvel Jr.
Technically crutches, I thought, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, fine line.
Jay Jones said, would it be horrible if I said Moses? He is quite a character, best party guest ever. I guess not.
Right. Tony Nasser chimed in with the Kingpin, the Riddler, and Matt Murdock, although they are technically Canes.
Again, yes.
Fine line.
It is a fine line, the difference between a cane and a stick. Ruth Sutherland, actually Darren posting as Ruth Sutherland on Facebook, said, does John Steed's umbrella count? How about Willy Wonka pretending to need a walking stick? Yes, I think the walking stick counts, but the umbrella doesn't. But
Controversial.
Yeah.
We had a couple of responses from Joe Crawford. First of all, he said Beta Ray Bill, not Donald Blake or that Gandalf. Right? I wouldn't know what Bill used anyway. I don't think I've ever read any of his adventures.
The Walt Simonson stuff?
Nah, before my time. And Joe continued on with the First Doctor. Okay, yes, that one I'll buy. Yep.
Wow. And then we heard from Philip Schweer, who was a newcomer to the show.
Hi, Philip.
He said, Ham Brooks from the Doc Savage pulps. I am unfamiliar with the character Ham Brooks.
Same. But
I do know who Doc Savage is.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, Mike, what have you got on a walking stick?
I'm going to go with Yoda. He's just a cool old grumpy dude living in a swamp, hobbling around with his walking stick.
Stealing torches.
Yep. And have you seen the bad lip reading song that features Yoda?
No.
About seagulls?
No.
I'll get Wilfred to share a link.
Okay.
It's hilarious. Okay. And his walking stick features prominently in it.
Nice.
I can't believe you've not seen it. The seagull song.
No.
You're in for a treat, my friend. A treat.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Excellent.
What about you? Who's your favorite character with a walking stick?
I'm going to go with Mr. Dark from the movie version of Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Ooh.
As played by Jonathan Pryce.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Evil. As anything, that guy.
Right.
And super performance by Jay Price.
Jay Price. So
The Price is Right in that one. So, I know many people haven't seen it, and it's a film that Disney seems to have buried, but damn, what a movie.
I remember you saying in the past that you're a big fan of that film.
I am a huge fan of that. I don't even have a copy, but it's stuck with me.
I must admit, I've never seen it. So I'll add. I'm just going to add that to my list, which currently only has Spider-Man: Homecoming on it. I swear to God, I tried to watch Spider-Man: Homecoming on iTunes one night. My connection kept crapping out, and then I fell asleep on my lounge, and I woke up, and it was still saying, "Oh, only 10 hours till downloaded." I was like, "Fuck you, iTunes!"
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Right. Oh, dear.
Wow. So, that's the end of the mailbag. No emails this week?
No. Well, everyone's busy at this time of year.
They are. Yeah. They are.
Some Christmas.
So, what are we doing next time, Mike?
Something different, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Do we want to tell anyone anything about this yet?
Over what is our summer break, we're going to be doing something a little bit different that is the brainchild of Paul's. And we're calling it a show within a show. It's going to be a bunch of mini-sodes, I guess the cool kids call them, in podcasting world. Tell us some more about it, Paul.
Well, Mike and I, we're both, we are aficionados of a certain type of DC comic, notably the Event, And, you know, what's more real than having books about an event is to talk about it. So we're going to start a little series called DC OCD. And we are going to be obsessively compulsive about DC events. And we're going to start alternating the show, Waiting for Doom, with DC OCD on the same feed, you know, starting in the new year. Maybe we'll end this show with the promo and, something for you to look forward to. I hope.
But it'll be good fun. It'll be good fun. It'll be something a bit different. It will force me to read part of my collection. It'll force me to buy some additional books for my collection.
Yes.
So my wallet thanks you.
Oh, welcome.
Oh, dear. So, yes, that's coming up from us in 2018. Of course, we've got lots more Doom Patrol to get through as well. But that's pretty much it for 2017 of Waiting for Doom.
Yeah, what a year.
This is our third year we're just wrapping up now. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That is amazing. So, yeah, well, thank you, Mike, for a fantastic year of podcasting and all your work in editing and, adding amazing music that always surprises and delights me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being an awesome co-host and coming up with some brilliant ideas. Like, I am excited for DC OCD, and there's going to be another JL May next year. So, again, all brilliant ideas coming from Paul there. And just for being an awesome co-host and chatting about our favorite comic book team for 3 years now. It's
easy to do with you, Mike. 3 years.
Good Lord.
Wow.
Oh, dear. So, yes, we're going to take a couple of weeks off over the Christmas break. Give everyone a chance to go and relax and recharge and come back bigger and better for year four. But whilst we're off the air, you can always get in touch with us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can say hi to Wilfred there. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can get in touch via the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And don't forget to check out Doug Zavish's excellent posts all about the patrol on his site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And that's us done. Year three wrapped
up. Awesome.
Volume two wrapped up. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Good golly. We'll have to think of all the time we can dedicate towards Burn next year.
I want to get back into volume three myself.
Yes. Yes. Now that volume two's wrapped up, where we pick up in volume three is very important.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, thanks for joining us again, guys. Thanks for all your support and for joining us each episode. And we will catch you again next year for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom. We did have a question of the week, or do we want to leave that?
Let's leave it.
Okay.
Let's leave it.
No question of the week for now.
Enjoy Christmas.
Enjoy the new year, whatever you celebrate.
However you celebrate, wherever you celebrate, whoever you celebrate with, have fun.
Yes.
Be safe, but have fun. Make sure you got cab fare to get home. Don't talk to strangers. And think twice about swiping right.
You don't want to go home, do you, Mike?
All right, we're out of here. See you next year, guys.
Bye.
Rockin' and rollin', down to the beach I'm strolling, but the seagulls poking my head, not fun. I said, seagulls, stop it now. Everyone told me not to stroll on that beach. Said seagulls gonna come poke me in the coconut, and they did, and they did, had me going like, nothing I could do but yell when these birds attacked me. When I tried to run, I fell, and then these kids started laughing.
your backpack while you run, 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 jump and stop. Put me down. I love to groove and boogie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Show you some dance moves.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't want you to.
If I had your giant feet out there on the beach, could about run those birds.
You're a psycho wiener.
Let me grab my beater.
Stop it, please. Don't hit me.
Man, quit that banging.
Hey, what's that stank?
You put a fish in our basket.
Oh, yeah. I forgot I did that.
You owe me an apology.
Just hold your breath and see when the time is right. Birds will back your face. Now run, 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 jump. I can be your backpack while you run. Swing from a hairy vine. I can be your backpack while you climb. Stand on one hand and lift rocks with your special gift. Run, 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 jump. Now breathe.
That's good. Like that. Like that.
One day I was walking and I found this big log. Then I rolled the log over. Underneath was a tiny little stick.
And I was like, that log had a child.
Someday, when you are older, you could get hit by a boulder. While you're lying there, screaming, come help me, please, the seagulls. Both your knees. Stop it now.
Hello, Paul. Hello. I am Dr. Herfenstaffner. Come in, please. Take a seat. Take a seat. What can I do for you today?
I can't sleep. I can't focus on anything. The only thing I can think about is, like, DC events.
DC events? As in the comic books? DC events?
Yes. The comic book events.
Ooh, interesting. Are we talking things like Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yeah, totally. That one, yeah.
Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, that one too.
Oh, very, very. Invasion, maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
The Genesis?
Not so much.
No? Oh. Okay, well, I think it's really good if you talk about the things that are troubling you in your life. So maybe you should do a podcast about this obsession.
What do you call this obsession? What do you think it is?
I think you're a unique case. I've not seen anything like this before in my office. I'm going to suggest that you have what we call DCOCD.
What? DCOCD?
You are obsessive and compulsive about your DC events. I think you should talk it out, get it out of your system via a podcast. I will help you, my friend. We shall do a podcast together about your DC OCD.
Oh, okay.
When I won't even charge you for it.
Awesome. I don't think I can claim you on benefits.
Yeah, it's good.
When shall we start?
I'll get back to you on that. I'll check my timetable.
Cool.